This is the control tower. May I repeat your mission? In 30 seconds, you get into the combat zone. The target for you to drop bombs are Alpha, Victor, CBS, Sony, Toshiba, EMI, Columbia, Crown, Polydor, Canyon, RVC, Wana, Pioneer, King, Japan, Polista, Disco May, Trio, Takuma, Kitty, SMS, Polygram, Pass, 4Life, Epic, Sony. And may I repeat your mission? Bomb all these and destroy them. Over.
Disconnection. Connection. Connection. Disconnection.
Welcome back to another edition of Lakeshore Record Exchange's AlternativeMusic.com podcast. This is episode number 21. I'm shop owner Andrew Chinesi, here with faithful co-host, noted music critic Rob Roberts.
Hello.
And we're here for another edition to another episode, introduce you to some new music that we think you should know about.
Number 21?
Episode number 21, yes. We have some new music and some old music. And as become a regular part of the show, we have some music news to start things out for you. One thing that was sort of surprising to me, and you'll probably know more about this than I do, being that you're a fan of his, but there was a lost documentary about Leonard Cohen called Bird on a Wire. Does that sound familiar at all?
No, and I'm not a fan of his.
You're not? I always thought you were a Leonard Cohen fan.
No, I like Leonard Cohen, actually.
Okay.
But, I've got a couple of records, but he's nobody I
buy
religiously.
Well, screw him then. We'll forget
like
about
Leonard
the story.
Cohen,
no, I'm kidding. Leonard Cohen, apparently there was a documentary called Bird on a Wire that was done back in 1972. It was about the European tour that he did back then. And it was shown very briefly in a very heavily edited version in 1974 and not seen since.
In theaters or?
Yes. But
in Canada?
It doesn't say where it was shown, just that it was shown, but it was in a very heavily edited form. And now they have, and this was the sort of mysterious part of the news article, they have rediscovered this documentary after, 26 years, and now are going to be showing it in its complete and pristine edition, and it's going to be exhibited at the Green Man Festival in England,
of course,
because most stuff happens over there. The film was made by Steve Matchett and Tony Palmer, and they apparently decided to pull this out of the archives and show it for the first time ever on August 19th. Again, at something called the Green Man Festival. So,
72 was a good period for Cohen too. So that should capture him at a good point. It should be an interesting documentary, I would think.
You know, not being somebody that is real aware of Leonard Cohen's career, it's hard for me to say, but I'm going to take your word for it.
Okay,
72 was his.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a peak, but. You know, and like I said, I'm not real well versed, but that was that was a good period, you know.
Right.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Now, I know that there was a movie made in, the mid 80s called Bird on a Wire with Mel Gibson and Goldie Hawn.
Where Mel played Leonard Cohen, that one?
I don't know. No, it wasn't. It was just sort of a, romantic comedy, I wonder now
if
there was any.
I'm sure Mel didn't swear at Goldie very much.
I wonder now if there was any connection between the two. But anyways, also in the music news, here's a little bit something shocking. Roxy Music have announced that they will reunite for a tour of the UK in 2011
with
the original members of Brian Ferry, Andy McKay, Phil Manzanera, and Paul Thompson.
But no.
Unfortunately, Mr. Eno will not be appearing with them again.
Didn't he participate in some reunion album, though? Or?
No, they did a reunion a few years back where he also did not appear. So I think, I don't know if there's, I know at some point there was some, I don't, some animosity between Brian and Brian.
Yeah, there was a bio of Eno out last year, 2 years ago, that I read. And I remember the guy made the point that Brian Ferry was always pissed off at Eno because he always got the women.
Right, and he was, you know, got more of the attention as the keyboard player, where Brian Ferry was the singer and didn't get as much, but who knows.
But ironically, if you look at the clips from that period, from their early period, you never see Eno. All you see is like his hand or like a boa, the flash of a boa or something. And
right. So anyways, Roxy Music is getting back together for a tour. There's no word as to whether or not that this would lead to an album of any kind, but they will be playing a series of dates at the end of January and the beginning of February, of course, all in Europe.
Not to belabor a point, but there, of course, I was being a bit glib. There was also musical differences, I guess, between
And Barry, absolutely,
which is the ultimate reason probably why they he left the band.
Right. Now, also in the news, this is just one of those. I don't know if it's newsworthy or not. I found it very surprising. David Gilmour and Roger Waters of the band Pink Floyd, two guys who have had quite a bit of animosity between them since the band had sort of, well, since Roger Waters left Pink Floyd, because they continued on after he left.
Right.
But there's been particular animosity between those two. They reunited for a four-song set at a benefit concert called the Hoping Formation Benefit, which happened on July 10th.
Was Nick Mason there?
No, he was not. The rest of the band was filled out by what I assume were studio players. But this show only held 200 attendees.
I'm sure they were invited attendees.
And right.
They were donations.
And the cost of the ticket was 1,750 British pounds.
Which is about $3,000, isn't it?
Yes, almost exactly. But the question would be, would you pay that kind of money to see four songs from a band?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I wouldn't have paid to see Pink Floyd after Syd Barrett left. So, you know, hey.
All right, well, say this was a group that you did like.
The original Soft Machine.
Okay.
Or not the original, the one with, let's say, the Kevin Ayers,
okay,
Robert Wyatt Soft Machine.
And they were only going to do four songs.
And it was $3,000? Would I do it?
What would be the most that you would pay to see just four songs from a band that you always...
I don't know. You know how I feel about these reunion bands. I just don't need it. And I probably wouldn't pay anything.
Right.
Maybe if they played in Rochester, I might pay
$20,
you know, for a ticket.
Right.
Maybe even
if it
30.
Was a benefit for some fantastic cause.
If it were a benefit for a fantastic cause, I'd probably pay some money if I had money.
A lot of disposable income.
Disposable income.
Right. Okay.
I'd get reunion bands. They're not my, you know. I mean, they've been okay, you know, but it's just not necessary.
Yeah, I feel the same way, personally. That,
I know you're a big Genesis fan. Would you? I bet you probably would pay to see Genesis with Gabriel.
I was not. No, I was more of a Peter Gabriel fan than I was a Genesis fan. So, if you could say you were gonna travel back in time, or he was gonna go back out on tour and tour his first and second solo records, which was sort of my favorite period of his career,
right?
It would be tempting, But I don't know as I would pay thousands of dollars to see it.
There's really nobody I would pay thousands of dollars for. Yeah. There's always good new music to hear.
Maybe to get a spot on the rooftop when the Beatles did that, the last live performance during Let It Be.
Yeah, I mean, that could be.
Because you could get into, you'd be in the movie too, so that would be a little bit of prosperity. That I probably would have paid for, but. Anyways, lastly in the music news, Sigur Rós, band that you're familiar with from Iceland.
Sunny Iceland, yes.
Their lead singer, have we ever figured it out? Is it Jonesy or Yonesy?
I think it's Yonesy, but Yonesy, I don't know.
Who has a solo album out right now called Go.
It's doing well, isn't it?
It is. He has announced that he'll be playing a solo U.S. tour to support the new album, and that's going to
be... He already did do a U.S. tour, didn't he? Because a friend of mine, I thought, saw him in Boston recently, he mentioned.
He may have done a couple of brief dates, but I guess this is going to be more of an extensive tour. It's supposed to start in San Diego in October and run through the middle of November.
Big tour.
And they've also a note that I can't even read my notes. Vincent Morrissey, who directed the Arcade Fire's Mirror Noir live film, is going to be filming Jonesy's live dates. So we can only infer from that there will be a live DVD sometime after the concerts happen. So. Those of you that are fans of Sigur Rós have something to look forward to.
Yes, and that's new music that you can listen to, that you don't have to go listen to some reformed band.
That's
that
true.
Needs thousands of dollars or wants thousands of dollars to hear them perform.
Exactly. And that does it for music news this episode. We're going to get back, we'll get right into the new music portion of the program. This week, Robert, you're going to start us off with a band that is... New to you.
Yes, it was new to me. I had not heard of these guys. And this is a perfect example of a new band that's interesting and new, and you don't have to listen to an old band that doing the same songs they did before. It's a band called The Books.
The Books, yes. This is their...
And the album is called The Way Out. It's their fourth release.
Right.
And like you said, it was the first I'd heard. I actually had not... They had not... appeared on my radar.
They've been around for a little while. I know that they're one of those bands that have. I found out about them originally at the store through customers coming in and saying, "Do you have the new Books record?" This is a few years back, and me, of course, saying, "I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'll find it. And we'll get it for you." And then
that was when was that their third record, and the one in 2005, which I guess was sort of somewhat of a breakthrough album for them.
No, this would have been
Lost
earlier.
And Safe. Oh, it's one of the first two.
Than that, yeah. So, Book of Lemon, I want to say, Lemon of Pink.
Yeah, the Lemon of Pink,
right, was the album, and it was one of those things where somebody came in and special ordered it. We got it for him, and then shortly after, another person came in and special ordered it, and then we just started carrying it regularly. So now, all of a sudden, I'm aware of The Books, even though I had not heard them at the time. So this new album just released a week ago. If you were going to sum up who or what The Books are?
Well, the books are two gentlemen named Nick Zamuto. And the other guy is, his last name, Paul DeJong, I think, DeJong, D-E-J-O-N-G.
Okay.
DeJong is a cello player and electronics, and Zamuto is, I think, guitar and electronics. But they do a lot of sampling, they do a lot with tapes. They're really an inventive band. Based on this, when I was listening to it, the first thing, I mean, I'm sure they're drawing from hip-hop and they're drawing from all the developments that have happened since then, but I also hear a lot of, Negative Land?
Yes, I agree. That was going to be the first, that was going to be the thing that first hit me when I first heard them was that I heard elements of Negative Land in there.
Yeah, perhaps they're a little more song-oriented towards Negative Land, but from what I, you know, I picked up their, after hearing this, I went on, I picked up the third album, Lost and Safe, and you can hear a progression between the third and the fourth. I really want to get the other two as well. I really like this band. But Lost and Safe seems to have a little more, is a little more song-oriented. This one, there are probably, I think there are 14 tracks on here, and maybe four are actual songs.
Okay.
The others are rely a lot on samples. Interestingly enough, a lot of them are put into song structures. As a matter of fact, the track I'm going to play is one of those that's a sample song, but it's really got a form and a song structure to it.
Okay.
They're an interesting band. The cello player, checking him out, you know, he had a recording back in 97 of the cello piano music of contemporary Russian composers, Shostakovich.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was unaware of that.
So Mudo has two albums of experimental electronic music that he did before the books.
Really?
All of this stuff looks kind of interesting. They're just a really interesting band. And this album is their first, I guess, since 2005, since Lost and Safe.
Yes.
So it's been eagerly anticipated. And it's really, I just think it's their best record of the two that I've heard. It's, everything just sort of seems to fall together. It's, you know, a suite almost. You know, everything flows. It's almost, you know, kind of weird to have to break it up. When I put this on, I tend to put it on and wind up following it all the way to the end.
Listening to the end, okay.
Which is always a good thing.
And so, again, if you were going to sum up the books, the sort of overall style of music that they do is,
collage.
To me, I would say, right, sample or collage-based, right.
But there are songs within the structures, you know.
Okay.
There are definite like folk type songs. Some, you're right. Let's go on. Shall we hear the track?
Okay. So what pieces have you picked out for us?
Okay, we're gonna hear a track called "I Didn't Know That." Thank you. There you have it, the books with I Didn't Know That, plus the little prelude that comes on just before that track that leads into it. It's very, I don't know. What do you think?
It's, yeah, definitely, again, I don't want to keep saying the comparisons to Negative Land, because for people that have never heard Negative Land, that's not going to help them at all.
Right.
But it is definitely like music that's made up of other things, that collage type sample issue that you were talking about features heavily in it, but it is song based. There is melody in
there. There's an overarching theme to the whole record. It starts and ends with this self-hypnosis tape.
Now, The Way Out, is that supposed to be the way out of something in particular?
Or? I honestly couldn't tell you, but it was the way, I don't know, the way out. The way out. I mean, it takes you out into another world.
Okay.
Very nicely, you know, a world with murderous children and
that could
heavenly
be it, maybe.
Choir harmonies. And there's one song that's an ode to an irrational number.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, a mathematical song.
Well, maybe that is. It's the title is meant in not as the way out, as opposed to the way in, but the way out.
It could be they are
way
that.
Out.
But it's a great record.
Very much so.
Heard some. You know, there have been some good albums coming out lately.
Yes.
This is one of them.
2010.
And, you know, instead of paying a lot of money to go hear a reformed band that you used to like,
right,
take a chance on the books, you know?
Okay.
They're two guys with imagination. You know, the interesting thing is I see that they're touring, and it's kind of weird. They're not a band I'm particularly interested in seeing live because everything that they do seems so studio-bound.
Yeah, I've seen bands that do somewhat similar music to this perform live, and it's less than
efficacious.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one thing to see somebody sit in front of their laptop and, you know, press some buttons and twiddle with some effect knobs, but
But then the other side of that too is that they also tend to overcompensate with like this like visual show that's
supposed
to be cool, but doesn't kind of leaves me cold, you know?
Right.
I know this is very old school, but for me, music is music, and visuals, you know. Hey, I've never quite come to grips with MTV, you know, and videos. I'm so totally disinterested in most videos. It's not funny.
Well, since there's not really a outlet for music videos anymore, anyways, other than probably the internet, I guess it's not something that really needs to be discussed anymore.
No, this is true, and you look embarrassed for me, Andrew.
No, not at all, because you're right. In the days when MTV did used to play videos on a regular basis, I know they still do, sort of very infrequently here and there. It's a different medium now.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyways, getting into my first track for the week, this is something new from a band that has been around for a little while. They are called Solvent. It is made up of one person, a guy by the name of Jason Amm. His last name is A-M-M. How would you guess on that?
I would guess, but yeah. There's also a great British avant-garde band called AMM.
Right. I think this is his real surname, so I'm going to go with Amm.
You don't think he named himself after the British?
There was no mention in any of the research that I did that he took on a new last name to sort of honor another band. But anyways, the guy's name is Jason Amm. However, he got the last name. He's from Toronto, Canada. He's been around since 1997, and he has put out four albums up to this point, much like the books. And it's been a while since he's put anything new out. This is actually his first album, his first new album in 6 years. The last thing he put out was in 2004, an album called Apples and Synthesizers. The music from Solvent is definitely electronic in style. I would put it in the vein of early Depeche Mode, where it sounds to me to be basically analog synthesizers and sort of synth pop type melodies, although there are more darker songs on the album. They're, most of them are instrumental, although the few tracks that do have vocals are vocals that are heavily distorted, that remind me a lot of the band that was big a year ago called The Knife, where everything is put, all the vocals are either put through a vocoder or a harmonizer or auto-tune or it's something other than just a straight vocal over the top of the music.
You said you compare them to early Depeche Mode. Early Depeche Mode tended to be a little more experimental. Would you say that about this guy?
Yes. There is definitely, as I said, there's definitely a darker side to the music, and I think you'll hear that in the track that we're going to play, which is an instrumental piece. Most of the tracks on the album tend to stay in the kind of electro-pop vein, though there's not really any, you wouldn't listen to this album and say that they're breaking any new ground in the electronic music world. But overall, you could definitely say it's a very pleasant listen from start to finish. It's a good, solid LP. Again, the album is called Subject to Shift. The band is called Solvent, and the track we're going to hear is called A Product of the Process. We'll be right back. Solvent from their new LP. This is their fourth ever. It's called Subject to Shift, and again, a track called A Product of the Process. As I said when we started that, a track that's a little darker, not quite as electro-pop as I may have made the band sound.
It was a good electronic track, though. Yeah.
Instrumental electronic stuff from Solvent. That's my new pick of the week. Robert, for your catalog, catacomb, library,
archival
pick of the week, what have you got for us?
Well, I've actually come up with something really good, because it's not only dovetails nicely with the Books record, but it also works nicely with one of your pet concepts. Okay, what we're going to hear is a track from it was an EP called The ABCs of Anarchism by Negative Land, and it was a CD. It was an EP where they collaborated with Chumbawamba remixed some tracks from their Tub Thumping album.
Now that is Negative Land and Chumbawamba right there. Those are two fairly dangerous names.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The reason I thought this worked nicely with you is Chumbawamba is one of those bands. You always talk about how a band that was characterized by one hit.
Yes.
And they are the classic characterized by one hit
band,
you know, with the track Tub Thumping, which was huge.
And yes, and still is in sports stadiums. And
And it's ironic because the actual reputation of Chumbawamba, to those who know them and those in England, is that they were first an anarchist band.
Absolutely.
With a strong political agenda, and they kind of morphed into a sample type band. I don't know if you remember, they had an album that they were going to put out called Jesus H. Christ that was composed entirely of samples, and just before they were going to release it, all these different labels came down on them and pulled it off the market.
I remember that they wanted to do an album of all not covers, but songs that sampled all Beatle records, and stopped them. I don't know if that was the same thing or not.
I don't think so, no, because this wasn't the one that I heard wasn't just Beatles samples.
Okay.
So. But anyway, and Negative Land is known for doing the same thing.
Right.
But here in the States, Chumbawamba is pretty much just known for the Tub Thumping and
the one
drinking songs.
Right. The one difference I would say is that Chumbawamba, I think, intentionally made that song Tub Thumping to be sort of a one-hit wonder, you know.
That's I've heard that too. You know,
where it, you know, that because that came way late in their career.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
it was not long.
They formed in '84, and I think Tub Thumping was a hit in '99.
Right, so it was not like a song that was, you know, the first thing you ever heard from the band, and then anything after that, you're always going to judge by that.
But it was a song that it was the first thing
Most
people heard from that band.
Without a
doubt. And it's what people, pretty much only what people know them for.
Yes.
They're a much broader group than that.
Right.
And they're much more interesting.
You know, you wonder too.
Although that song, it was enjoyable. It was good to hear.
Right. If it did have any of the intended effect of, here's a band that's not your typical pop band, you know, not going to put out your typical pop record, they put out something like so over the top, accessible and listenable and shoutable that anybody who the first time you hear the song, you're singing along with it.
Right. Well, the other thing they're known for, though, just to stick something in here too, is just before this, in addition to the sampling stuff they were doing, they were also doing. Did you ever hear English Rebel Songs? That one,
yes.
Which is basically old folk songs
from the 1800s,
Tub Thumping could actually be
right
a spiritual descendant of. So that and those songs are actually singable and. You know, you could follow along and sing along with them.
I guess my question was going to be, do you think there were of all the millions of people that have heard Tub Thumping, any of them that heard that and said, wow, this is interesting, let me delve deeper and go backwards and
pick
listen
up pictures of starving children sell records,
stuff like that, you know, you would have to think
they'd be surprised.
The percentage is probably pretty small, but you know, you have to wonder, are there many Chumbawamba fans out there that were hooked in from that one big single that they had?
I doubt that there are, but if they picked up anything, maybe they picked up the next record, which would have been this EP with Negative Land.
Right.
And this is what they would have heard. Shall we play the track?
Okay.
What we're going to hear is a track called Smelly Water.
Wow, what a team! Right, thanks for getting together like this. We've got a real challenge on today, right? 2 days to crack the problem of how to sell water plants across Europe and right here in the UK by direct marketing.
Okay, on the negative side, Fia.
You make her brush her teeth. You tell her not to talk to strangers. So why do you put arsenic in her orange juice? Body copy supporting that proposition and quite a powerful call to action.
Yes, those say. Right, that's okay. Are you on, mate? Switch on.
Another cup of Java. Give me some nickels, Barney. Give me a cup of coffee.
Better settle for a hamburger.
Another cup of Java. Give me a cup of coffee.
Much like our coffee.
I noticed you're drinking your seventh hamburger.
Well, here in our part of the country, we have a problem with our water.
Another cup of Java. Give me some nickels.
Anything else?
Barney.
Anything else?
Yeah, what else?
Steaks, tough.
Yeah, what else? Java. Yeah, what else you got today for coffee?
How about anything else?
Give me a cup of coffee. Another cup of Java. Java.
You see me?
Java. Java.
You see me?
Java. Java.
You see me?
Java. Java. This stinks.
It has a distinct odor.
Looking glass.
Libido.
You have to be told to watch Channel 4 at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Stinko.
You need to watch the TV commercial and discover
Stinko.
The collected impurities in their water.
Drink.
In fact, worms would appear.
Stinko.
So you could have arsenic.
Stinko.
Asbestos.
Stinko.
All the nasties. All the nasties in words suddenly appearing.
Stinko, blotto, free love,
arsenic,
bathtub gin,
asbestos,
monkey glands, Karl Marx,
arsenic,
cubism, squiff,
asbestos,
neurotic,
all the nasties,
heterosexual.
My, what an eager little mind. You won't need some of these words for months and months.
And by judicious questioning, we'd help find out precisely the kind of people who are interested in this. The TV campaign to work on. Several TV campaigns to make up. What about attention grabber?
Dead fish.
Dead fish. Brilliant.
Target people by the sort of water they've got. By the sort of house they've got. The sort of family. Yes. Water pollution is certainly topical.
Half smelly water, and of course onto lots of products. And the product does what it says it's going to do, and it does all of the things that all of the other products said that they were going to do and never did. So.
Lots.
products.
Another cup of jam.
Of course, this is a very difficult problem for most of us out here.
Another cup of jam.
Run of the mill.
Another cup of jam.
Settle for a
7th cup. Okay, with onions.
Stop it. Back. Back to real purity. In other words, when a disaster happens, we hit the press with an ad about purity of water. Are you pregnant again?
Yes!
babies, right.
Emotive. I mean, we could use this emotive mother and child thing.
Stop me!
Trip.
This is a special message for the Larson family. Your daughter, Lauren, will be 5 years old on April 2nd, 1995. In this time, she may have drunk 350 gallons of water. Wouldn't you like the water Lauren drinks to be as crystal clear and pure as can be? Only 5 cents a gallon?
Goes the water.
So that was Negative Land and Chumbawamba collaborating on Smelly Water.
That's exactly what I would think Negative Land and Chumbawamba would sound like together.
Yeah, it
too
is. But the amazing thing is I think it sounds a lot like the books.
Absolutely, yes,
you know, the
very much so
precedent. Fun track, fun EP, worth the reason I chose it is, you know, well, you were saying you don't remember it, and
right,
I think it was one, even, you know, Negative Land fans might have skimmed over it,
right,
or Chumbawamba fans. Anyways, check it out.
Okay.
The ABCs of Anarchism.
My catalog pick for the week comes from a band by the name of Hefner. They were one of those bands that I had always heard the name. I would see ads for them in the British tabloids, but I never knew what they sounded like until we had gotten one of the albums in at the store, and I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, they're not together anymore. They were essentially an indie rock band. I would put them more in the lo-fi vein, maybe than Britpop vein as far as sound goes. Somewhat similar to Pavement, but a little more pop-oriented, I guess. That's any kind of a description. They started in London in 1995, and they put 4 albums out. That seems to be the theme this week of
Negative Land has more than 4, and so
yes,
does Chumbawamba.
That's true. But they put 4 albums out, and in their time together, the best, I thought, of all the albums was the last one that they did, which came out in 2001. It's called Dead Media. And I think it'd be more maybe accurate to call them urban folk, lo-fi urban folk, I think maybe would be the best way to describe what they sound like, because there's a mix of essentially acoustic and electric guitars along with some analog keyboards. And the 4 albums that they did all came out on the Two Pure record label, which is noted for...
That was a good label.
Yes, they did a lot of really great independent bands. And the group, by the way, is essentially Darren Heyman, Anthony Harding, John Morrison, and Jack Hayter. And that's Hayter, not Hater. So... There's no funny punk anarchist meant in that.
Like
the guy's
Alice
name.
Nutter,
right?
Of Chumbawamba,
right? Exactly. The group played their final gig in 2001 in December, shortly after they were supporting this album. So it's been almost 10 years now since they've been around, but a band that should still be thought of or you know, remain in the public consciousness. We're going to hear a track from them. I think this is a perfect example of what Hefner was all about. This is called The King of Summer.
From which album?
From the very last release that they did in 2001, Dead Media.
I did the right thing in the wrong way, and now there's hell to pay.
From their very last LP from 2001, that's again almost 9 years ago now, and a track called The King of Summer. Very
very poppy.
Upbeat poppy song. I think that sort of sums up the band fairly well, though. And it's a sort of a shame that they aren't around anymore. For those of you that are interested, again, they did four albums. And then after they broke up in the end of 2001, Darren Heyman, the guy who is the lead singer from the band, has formed a new group called The French, and he's already released one LP called Local Information that came out in 2003 that I haven't heard yet, but it's something I'd like to track down, so...
Gee, that's 7 years old.
Yeah.
So they haven't put out anything since.
Not that I'm aware of, but again, I'm not super up on all the Hefner history. You know, I have this one album that I really like, and I thought, what the heck, this would be a great one to play as a catalog track.
It was.
So that's going to do it for us again this week on the AlternativeMusic.com podcast. Again, I'm shop owner Andrew Chinesi, here with co-host, noted music critic Rob Roberts. If you have any questions or comments, we're always interested in hearing any feedback you might have. You can email us at podcast@alternativemusic.com. And always, if you're curious about any of the music that you heard, you can go to the podcast page, the alternativemusic.com website, and see all the notes for who we played, what track, what album it came from, and if it's still available or not. Until next podcast, Robert, do you have anything, any words of wisdom to leave with the audience?
Not a thing.
All right, and until next time, we will talk to you later.